2020, and we are meeting via teleconference call via the BlueJeans software. This is due to the pandemic and also Oregon Governor's order for physical distancing. As we are a water and sewer authority, we are an essential business to our community and must do everything possible to ensure continued operations and therefore must protect the health of our staff. And that is one of the things in doing that is keeping the board out of the office. I will call the roll and then I will go back and give some history and offer some suggestions to the board regarding the formalities for conducting this meeting video teleconferencing. So, calling the roll, Ann Price.
Here.
Don Carlton.
Here.
For the record, Director Gogas.
Yes, here.
Wonderful. For the record, Tom Donahue is trying to call in, but we've been unable to establish voice contact with him at this point. We'll hopefully have him join us in a few minutes here. When the governor's order went into effect on March 23rd, we knew that we would either have to cancel our meeting or find alternative ways to meet, and we chose to find an alternative. Kirk and Michelle took the lead of researching, testing the software, and procuring additional equipment. Staff properly noticed this meeting in the Headlight Herald, but because we didn't have all the pieces in place, the public was advised that in that notice to call the office for more information, and I believe also that we would be posting information at the post office. Staff posted more information last week at the post office, again asking the public to call for information if they wanted to hear the meeting live or to email Kirk if they had questions that they wanted the board to address. Staff has run no less than 5 dry runs of this video teleconferencing to try to get things set up and work out the bugs, and I certainly appreciate that. So here we are. Today I ask that the board have their video and audio turned on, if at all possible, and I ask that when you want to speak, if you'll give me a little wave of your hand because I can see you, and I'll call on you. And I'm wanting to do that because this process will decrease the over-talking and the voice interruption to a minimum. And the less over-talking and voice interruption we have, the better the MP3 file is going to be, the easier it'll be for the public, and also it'll be easier for transcribing these notes. So second, please make sure you're in a space that's free of background noise and that your devices have been silenced or put on do not disturb for phone calls, texts, and emails. Are there any questions regarding this part of the meeting process? Hearing none and seeing shaking of heads, I will move on to the agenda then. Cameron, any questions to you?
No question.
No questions.
Was anybody from? Okay, no questions.
Thank you. All right, item 3 on the agenda, the approval of the meeting minutes of March 3rd, 2020. Any questions or comments? Cameron, any questions or comments?
No.
Thank you.
Ann? I'll move that we approve the minutes of the March 3rd, 2020 business meeting.
I'll second it.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the business meeting minutes of March 3rd, 2020. All in favor? Aye with a visual.
Aye.
Aye.
Cameron?
Cameron.
All aye. Right. Any noes? Meeting minutes have been approved. Item 4, financial reports. 4A, accounts payable for March 3rd, March 15th, and March 31st of 2020. Any questions on the payables? I see shaking of heads. Yeah. I see Tom has joined us. Tom, can you hear us? I see his picture, but I do not hear voice. All right, moving forward, I will take a motion on the payables, please.
I'll move that we approve the accounts payable for March 3rd, March 15th, and March 31st of 2020.
I'll second.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the accounts payable for March 3rd, March 15th, and March 31st of 2020. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Four ayes. Any nays? Hearing none.
Can I be heard?
Payables. I'm sorry?
Hello?
Tom, can you hear us?
This is Tom. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Tom.
I can hear you. Yay.
That's all. Good. We've got Tom. Tom has joined our meeting at 5:09. Welcome, Tom. We are just in the process of reviewing the financials, item 4B, fiscal year report. Any questions for the authority manager? Yes. Cameron, is that you with a question?
Yes.
Please ask your question.
My question is since the coronavirus, are we winding up having more rags in our system because of the toilet paper depreciate?
That's a good question, but we really haven't seen a significant change yet. We had 10 incidents and a total of 6 man hours to remove rags.
Okay.
Any other questions on the fiscal year report? All right, moving on, item 5, the manager's report. Kirk, it's your show.
Okay, and I've already addressed your question, Cameron. I would like to point out there were no permit violations for the month of March. We did have one sanitary sewer overflow. It was a small incident of about approximately 50 gallons at our Beachy lift station. Other than that, I wanted to spend most of my time discussing some of the impacts of COVID-19 on our operation. So I'll start with what was included in the manager's report. March 16th, we closed our office to in-person transactions. Also on March 16th, we had one operator get a serious cold, and he ended up being off for 2 weeks. Just to get more specific, I think that employee was actually feeling better after 4 days. But we kept him away from others for another 6 working days before he was allowed to return to work. We've had no other incidents recently of anyone else getting sick, so that's good news. We were concerned in mid-March about the deliveries of chlorine, considering the demands of chlorine in the marketplace. But we had no problem getting a delivery. We placed an order, received a delivery that week. We noticed an increase in water and sewer demands on March 21st, the spring break weekend. It was no surprise, but fortunately, things changed the following week. On March 24th, Oregon State Parks closed their parks, and access was restricted. We now are seeing below normal water and sewer demand. We basically have essential personnel working in the office. Michelle has done a great deal of work from home. Rochelle has also worked from home, but when needed, Rochelle's been primarily the one to come into the office to print things and perform functions that she can't do at home. Let's see. Our field crews are mostly working individual projects whenever possible. We're taking two vehicles out to every job to ensure that our employees are separated from one another, and we've been instituted strict social distancing practices in the office and the field. We have had some concerns from mostly vacation rental customers, and we'll be talking about that later. And on March 30th, our operator that was sick returned to work. At that point, we were able to move one of our key employees over to the Horn Creek water treatment plant so that he's separated from other employees in case there was some type of exposure at our facility. And then the real impacts project-wise came from the Broughton Road Water Main Replacement Project, and that company is not actually working. They're not traveling for jobs at this point, so that's been put on hold. Other than that, things are running exceptionally well given the circumstances. And we feel fortunate about that, but we're prepared for changes if employees start getting sick. We did have a master plan kickoff meeting last month on March 20th, and we got started there, and Michelle's done a tremendous job gathering information so that we can start that process. Let's see, McClure & Sons has come out and replaced the plug valve under warranty. That was an extensive project simply because we had to drain our one of our two reactors so that work could get done. That all occurred in mid-March. We've also recently completed Cummins generator maintenance, where they came out, performed maintenance, and load testing on all of our generators. And then our biosolids management plan was also completed this month. I'm not going to cover everything, but I also really need to point out to the board that Tillamook County Emergency Communications District has recently sent us a letter that indicated they're no longer going to be able to provide dispatch services for us. And we're looking at our alternative options. Most of those options all consider the use of cell phones, which has a marginal service in our area. So it's been more of a challenge than I expected. But we're going to continue working on that, and we have till the end of this month to come up with an alternative. We still have one vacant operator position, and we conducted a safety meeting on March 18th where a video was shown that cautioned us all about the urgent need of wearing eye protection. So I'm happy to answer any questions that the board may have at this time.
John, go ahead.
I'm curious. I don't know, Kurt, whether or not we've had billing since this whole thing started, but are you seeing less money coming in because of less water usage?
Well, it just so happened that we had, I think everything so far that we're seeing is going to be normal billing receipts. We had the strong weekend in mid-March, and then the following weekend was lower than normal. So I anticipate next month our water usage will be down and we'll be seeing less revenue. I'll be watching that closely, and next month I'll report more precisely what our impacts from the isolation is causing for us. I'm not extremely concerned at this point. A lot of our revenue comes from fees and regular charges that are that aren't based strictly on water usage demand.
Thank you.
Kurt, I have a question. Cameron?
Yes, yes. Cameron, go ahead.
What was the problem with the minor incident on Beachy problem?
We had a high-level float alarm fail to call us, and so we got a call from the customer, the customer across the street, and we were able to respond within 10 minutes. Unfortunately, and which is why it was included in this report, was because it impacted a customer. And he was actually able to contain it in his shower, but his shower did have to be cleaned. And we did have to neutralize, or at least disinfect, the spills directly surrounding Beachy Lift Station. As you can imagine, it was 50 gallons. Wasn't a tremendous amount of flow, but it was definitely significant enough for us to report. And we did submit a report to DEQ on that.
So the alarm system, is that part of the night bar, the dispatch that we didn't receive the call?
No, the call-off portion was actually good from the customer. We got it immediately. But no, our alarm site failed to notify us of the problem prior to it reaching a level that the customer would have to inform us.
We're kind of going back to the 911, that take our night calls. Do we pay for that service?
I don't believe we do. I don't believe we do currently, but if we have to hire, and there's a chance that we may have to look for an alternative dispatcher to provide us our calls, there may be charges associated in that in the future.
Okay.
So, and the reason I definitely needed to include it in this agenda is because we may be spending some money on that. I don't think it'll be a great deal of money, but it could cost us over $1,000 to get set up for that type of service.
Okay.
Tom, any questions of the authority manager? Lost Tom. Ann, any questions?
No, I would just like to convey my appreciation to all of the staff for the extra effort that's being required and the time and effort they're putting in on all of our behalf. I would ask you just to convey that to the staff tomorrow in whatever way you can.
I will certainly do that, and it's much appreciated. We're all feeling very fortunate to be working these days, but we're also dedicated to make sure that things continue to run uninterrupted.
I've got another question.
Go ahead, Cameron.
Did we have any of our customers want to be in on this meeting, join?
Yeah, that's a good question. We did have our posting, I know that I reached out to both Robin Kostrika and Mike Deal, and they both decided that they would just review the recording of the meeting, the MP3 of the meeting, tomorrow.
All that is involved with today's meeting is the board members, yourself, and Rochelle.
And Tim Hirsch.
Tim Hirsch is on, and I don't know if Tony Owen is still on. I can't see him.
According to my list, he is.
Okay.
And Tim, I'd like to thank you for coming as well, because I meant to call you, and I just got distracted at work, but I was glad to see that you saw the notice and called in.
Any other questions for the authority manager? All right, hearing none, we'll move on. There's no items under unfinished business, so we'll start new business item 7-1, the COVID-19 customer consideration item. Kurt, would you like to introduce this?
Sure. This item was put on the agenda for lots of reasons, but primarily because the American Water Works Association has determined that water and sewer service is essential in a pandemic situation like we're experiencing. Everyone is being reminded to wash hands frequently and just to make sure that areas are clean and disinfected. So because it's considered an essential service, the American Water Works Association has determined or is recommending that utilities do not shut off water and sewer services to customers for lack of payment. I did include some information in the packet. I'm happy to answer any questions that the board might have. There's some more additional details that AWWA sent out, and that was in the packet. So if there's any questions on that information, I'd be happy to answer that.
Ann, go ahead.
I have a question, first of all, in relationship to how we might carry this out. And my question is that at the current time, if we do close off service due to lack of payment, there is correspondence that goes out to the customer. I can't quote it, but I know there's a letter that goes out. And I'm assuming if we go this direction that we will send a maybe revised version of that letter communicating to them that we have not we've not done this and we have done this, so that the customer is very clear that their lack of payment does not mean that those charges have been excused. We're simply not turning the service off. They will still be obligated for the cost of service.
And, I believe, and I'll answer that question, and then I'll let the board consider. I certainly am not proposing what the board should consider. But the way that the suggested motion was written, it really does just identify the shutoffs will be temporarily postponed. Although I personally would also recommend that we waive a $100 service lockoff fee, because that $100 is really intended to cover our costs for actually shutting their water off and putting locks on the water meter so that it can be used. We won't be doing that activity.
So are we, this Cameron, are we currently, do we have any customers that were at that point?
Michelle are on the phone, but I believe there were about six customers that were scheduled for shutoff last month. But I have to also add that we were fortunate that we had just performed shutoffs before any pandemic declaration had been made, and so nobody has been shut off since the pandemic. Michelle, would you like to add to that?
We have, you're correct in the number, we have six, and they were to be turned off this week. No letter was sent to them, nor will they be locked off.
Ann, you had a question?
Yeah, I just want to come back to the point I was trying to make, and that is in the nature of the communication we have with customers. When we get to the point where we would have otherwise shut off their service, we would have sent them a letter saying, we are going to do this, and here's why, and here are the steps available to you to help avoid it, and here are the steps available to you to reinstate your service. That those kinds of details, I believe, are in that letter. And I think it's very important that even if we're not shutting off somebody's service, that we're still communicating with them on the steps involved. For example, I believe that we urge them to call us to discuss assistance for paying the fees, the service fees, and we have some avenues to suggest to them for financial assistance. So I want to make sure that that letter in the in a new version will still go out, and that they understand that the fees are still being charged on the account, and that B, that we have ideas that might assist them in paying for the costs.
Okay, you're correct that there is the letter, the shutoff notice that we sent out, and I 100% agree that it should be modified from its current version in these times for us to send it out. So, but I do think the board should consider not charging the fees, and I think I've already made that statement, so I'll let you guys determine how you want us to proceed with that.
Okay, I'd like to chime. I'm sorry, Cameron, go ahead.
I'd like to know, are these the six that we're talking about, are these repetitive?
Cameron, I'm not sure that it matters at this point, because the recommendation of the National Water Association and the governor is that utilities, water and sewer utilities, do not turn off service at this point.
Excuse me. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That water and sewer utility, water and sewer is not turned off on any particular customer at this point, due because of the pandemic. And that's the issue that we're addressing. We're not trying to look at whether these customers are routinely late or whether they're different from anybody else. It's just to make sure that through this pandemic, everybody has access to water.
Okay.
I think, oh, go ahead, Sean.
I kind of understand what Cameron is asking, though, or maybe he's not, and it's just what I'm thinking, but it would be interesting to know if there's a difference between regular shutoffs that are happening as they would have up until a month ago, and any shutoffs that are now happening because of this COVID thing. I mean, those are things we need to think about in our planning and our budgeting and all that kind of stuff. So there is some relevance there.
Yes, I would concur that we need to track the information about who's behind and whether or not that particular customer, A or B, is one that has typically been on our list as a non-payment or historically been on list as a non-payment, versus for those that are first timers at this point.
Right. And,
correct.
And yes, I would definitely make sure that we start tracking that information, and because I'm also expecting to see a change. I think that we're going to have customers that were never delinquent previously. Now that they're going to be informed. Maybe indirectly, maybe directly, that their water won't be shut off. I think we're going to see an increase in that, in the number of customers that are going to be at that point where they would be shut off. But with that said, I also don't anticipate.
Hang on, Cameron.
I have one last thing I wanted to say about that. With that said, I don't, at this point at least, anticipate that to be get anywhere over a number of like 50 people that aren't staying current on their bills. When we stay under 50 people, then, you know, we're talking maybe a $5,000 impact on authority if we're not charging those fees. But it will be a larger impact based on the revenue that's not being paid, though. So we're just going to have to keep track of that.
Cameron, you have a question?
Now, let me understand. Yeah, let me understand that, all right, you, for residential, and I'm not sure of the billing and how, I mean, Michelle keeps track of all that. Do people try, I understand that you can't stay current, but if they make a payment, a lease of something, how do we look at that?
Michelle, go ahead and answer, and I'll pipe in if I want to add something.
A customer has 90 days before their water is turned off for non-payment. They are sent a past due letter. They are sent a rather threatening letter, and they have 90 days. They know that they're behind. If they call and say they're $400 and they pay $25, that doesn't get them to the 60-day point. Our policy has been that if they make a payment the day before they're to be locked off and get to just 60 days, we will not lock them off. It is the repeat customers that are 90 days or the new customer who for some reason has moved and not told us. Their auto pay was shut off for some reason, but they have to be 90 days out there. And that's a long time before we turn somebody off. And the person that calls and cries and makes $25 payments, they'll never get caught up. So at some point, at the 100th day, they will end up being locked off.
Now, are
you saying? I'm sorry, Cameron, would you hold?
Sure.
So the six people that were scheduled for lock off this week are people who have been in arrears for the 90-day period. They have received communications. They have or have not communicated with us. But the bottom line is they have not brought their account up to only 60 days past due.
That's
and so that is why they would be scheduled for lock off this week.
That's correct. The only thing we did different in this process was we did not mail them the letter 5 days before the lockoff saying that you will be locked off on this day. We did not do that.
Ann, and then back to Cameron. Ann?
So it sounds to me as if the people that the six people we're talking about right now are not people that are affected by the coronavirus or COVID-19.
I can't answer that. I don't know. I mean, they haven't paid their bill.
And I think that if they haven't paid their bill in 90 days, the 90 days precedes the coronavirus pandemic declaration. So it's hard to determine. We have no way of determining whether or not the COVID-19 affects them or not. Cameron, did you have a comment?
Oh.
Yes, it would be my that 90 days, this happened before our pandemic hit. I mean, yes, this would help them. I don't want to see anybody's, you know, water sewer gets shut off. But, yeah. Now, that would be all six of them were prior to the COVID-19.
Yes, so let me see if I can focus us here. The item before us is to determine that if we want to follow the AWA recommendations and the governor's order, and decide to temporarily postpone any and all water shutoffs that are due to lack of payment. Whether we want to see that until further notice or put a particular date in there, whether we want to identify that we need to have a beginning date on it, I think we need to include in whatever motion we make that it's due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And I would suggest that we consider making a motion tonight, but that we ask staff to prepare a resolution, because this is a change in our rates. Our rates were set by resolution, and it would behoove us to follow that process and have a resolution, I believe have a resolution in place with this, that we would then modify or change as time goes forward.
We will do that.
I agree.
All right, so it sounds like from voice and from visual that we're all supportive of this. One item that we haven't talked about that we may want to include, as other districts have, and that is to suspend the late fees that would be charged to any account for past due payment. If you, there is an online list of states, utilities within states, and what different states are doing. And from what I've seen, the majority of them are not changing their rates, but they are temporarily postponing water shutoffs, and they are not charging any late fees during this particular time frame. And I've seen as the end date for many of their directions or motions on this, that is the, once the pandemic has been announced as over, then there's another 15 days before they start in reinstituting late fees and so forth, and their processes go back.
Now, Carolyn, when you say that, would that be a direction of the governor?
The American Water Works Association has recommended that utilities postpone any water shutoffs. The governor of Oregon has supported that.
So when the governor says we can go back, then we'll go back.
No, the person that announces the end of the pandemic is not the governor. I believe that's who. Ann and Sean both had their hand up. Ann, you want to add to the discussion here?
Well, I was thinking along maybe the same lines Cameron was, because our governor declared a state of emergency for the state of Oregon, and she would discontinue that state of emergency when she deemed the pandemic was sufficiently abated for Oregon to operate normally. But I don't know. Maybe there's a national authority that we should pay more attention to on that.
Or to say, we could also say that we're going to do it until June 30th, because June 30th is the end of our fiscal year, but we need to put something in there, I think, to until further notice may be a little too vague, because our board meetings are in a different cycle. Sean, do you want to add to the discussion here?
I do. I concur with Ann, and my feeling is that it really is the governor that puts an end to the state of emergency. I think what's going on, you know, nationally is too discombobulated. I mean, every state's in place, and so my feeling would be, you know, the governor is who determines that the state of emergency is over. I would like to say, though, however, I like the idea of an until further notice thing, and the reason that I say that is because the economic impact of this thing is going to be devastating. Having things go back to normal 15 days after the governor declares this over, things are not going to be back to normal 15 days after the governor.
Correct.
Yes, Ann?
I can understand why you say that, Sean, and and one part of me agrees completely. I know realistically it's going to be months, if not years, before things are, quote, back to normal, unquote. My challenge, though, with that language,
my cultural neighborhood,
my challenge with that language until further notice, I mean, is that who determines how much longer we might go beyond the time the governor declares the emergency abated? And I think that we would have differing views when that time comes. We would all have differing views on when the when the financial impact of the emergency would be over. So my suggestion would be that we use the governor's declaration that the emergency is over in the state of Oregon, and then give it 15 days after that, and that we understand that we can and probably will revisit that issue at that time.
I agree. I agree with you, Ann.
Anybody else want to add their comment? Okay, it sounds like we're in agreement with regards to temporarily postponing water shutoffs. Are we in agreement to suspending late fees at the same time?
Yes.
Yes? Yes. No? Ann?
Yes.
So if we're suspending late fees, does that take effect? I mean, anything that we do now would take effect at the time the board passes the motion, correct? So that late fees that are already on the account are still going to go forward. They will stay on the account. So it would be suspending late fees from this date forward.
That is correct.
I agree.
Michelle?
Yeah, just letting you know that it would be this Friday that we would send out past due letters and post the late fees. So that was good timing.
All right. It sounds like we're in agreement. Then can someone make the motion to pass this and then also to follow it up with resolution? Sean, you first, then Ann. There's a question here.
Yeah, I'm in agreement on postponing things. I'm not in an agreement on the 15-day thing after the governor says this is over.
Well, we could always revisit that.
We can always revisit it if we don't have a cutoff date.
Ann?
So, Sean, you're suggesting that this decision that we're making now would extend through until the governor removes the emergency declaration and period. No 15 days after that.
No, what I'm saying is that we say that we're going to suspend the lockoffs, we're going to suspend the late fees, and we will revisit that at some point, and the five of us board members will be the ones who determine when it's time to put that back in place.
John, I think that it's prudent in this motion and going forward and putting it in a resolution that we have a date. If we want to use a board meeting as a date, I don't mind if we want to use August as a date. We can change any date. I hate to put it way out there, but I think that it's prudent for us to have some type of border on it rather than leaving it open. That would be my personal preference. Ann?
I don't see the logic of not tying it to some in particular action, in particular, in this case, the governor's removal of the emergency action, because what if the emergency is removed. I just think the timing of that is going to be hard to work with. If we tie it to something in particular like that, I think that's understandable to the public, for one. I think it gives us clarity, for two. So I'm just not following what you're saying, Sean.
Michelle?
I know I'm not a board member, but would it help that if it were 3 months after the governor says that the crisis is over, or 6 months after the crisis was over, to give more time? No?
I mean, I think that would help. I mean, we're the ones here who are going to have to make the decision when to implement it anyway, so... And I think people are woefully underestimating the economic impacts this thing's going to have.
I agree with you, Sean, but I think that to try to pick a date is arbitrary. And I'm not comfortable with the arbitrary quality of that. I would rather be more specific, and then when that time comes, examine the situation and extend it if we want to extend it because of our judgment about the community and the economy and everything else.
I'd like to see, instead of maybe a 15 days, a 30 day, and then possibly if we need to readjust at a board meeting, that just, then we can change it then, address it again. But I think after the governor declares, I think there should be at least 30 days, and then address it again if need be. And probably we're going to have to, but I'm agreeing of an end date.
So, Cameron, it sounds like what you're saying is that if we were to use the governor declaring that the state of emergency is over and add 30 days to it, that would give us at least a board meeting, if not more, in between the state of emergency and the 30 days that's already scheduled for us to discuss it and figure out how we were going to move forward. And at that point, we would be looking at what revenue we were collecting, how many potential shutoffs there were in line, and where we were at and what we could do to help people, and then decide at that point what we needed to do.
Yeah.
John, would you be okay with that?
I don't know. I can't decide.
Are we ready for a motion then to take a vote, or do we have other information?
I don't think we have other information. I think we need to move forward in order to make sure that we aren't doing the shutoffs and make that official. So that those shutoffs that are in the pipe are protected, and that those shutoffs going forward, at least for a chunk of time, are also protected, and that we follow up and get a resolution in place so that legally we are in a position of being able to do this and not leave ourselves open to any problems in terms of how we run that. Don, did you want to add in before we move forward?
No, I'm okay.
Okay. Ann?
So I will move, and bear with me, I'm hoping I get this right. I will move that we follow the AWWA recommendation to temporarily postpone water shutoffs that are due to lack of payment until further notice. And in doing so, we will not charge late charges associated with that action, and further that this action will not apply to any case of blatant water waste or abuse of water or such things as leaks, etc.
I second it.
So let's have some discussion.
I didn't include the part about how long. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So I would add on to the beginning of that, if we can do that, until 30 days past the Governor Brown removing the emergency action because of COVID-19, I would move that we follow the WWA recommendation to temporarily postpone shutoffs that are due to lack of payment until further notice and suspend late fees due to the COVID pandemic. And this action does not apply in any case of blatant water waste or abuse of water service, in particular leaks.
I second.
All right, let me see if I've got the phrasing right. Beginning today, or do we need to say beginning March 23rd when the governor's order went in? It's beginning today. It has been moved that we are going to follow the AWW recommendations and temporarily postpone water shutoffs and suspend associated late fees that are due to lack of payment until the governor of Oregon removes the state of emergency for COVID-19 until 30 days after the governor of Oregon removes the state of emergency for COVID-19. Did I get that, Ann?
Yes.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, so we have 3 ayes, 1 nay, and motion passes. And Kurt, would you prepare a resolution for us to finalize at the next meeting so that we have this in the proper format?
We certainly will.
All right, thank you.
We'll implement the policy effective today.
Terrific, thank you. All right.
Kurt, I'd like to also see that we revisit this at our next meeting.
Cameron, well, I think all of these items regarding our water sewer revenues will come up at every meeting until we get through this.
I think what will change is different people will have issues with their water sewer bills. We can adjust as a board.
All right. We will have the related business items, the COVID-19 related business items on our agenda on a regular basis until we get through this crisis.
Yes.
Item 7.2, another customer consideration. So there are two customer considerations in this particular item. One item is to change the water sewer lock-off fees to suspend the time frame and to change the fee from 200 to 100. Kirk, do you want to present that piece?
Yes, thank you. We've received several calls, particularly from vacation rental property owners that are concerned about the fee associated with shutting their water off. One of the alternatives they have to continuing to pay the monthly capital improvement charge when they're not really using any water, they're not renting out their properties, one of the options would be to shut off their water. And our current rate structure has a charge for that, for us to shut it off, of $200. We've looked closely at our costs associated with shutting that water off, and we feel that $100 would be a more appropriate amount to charge during this pandemic. So I'm recommending that we do that.
So, Kurt, you're recommending that we suspend the 30-day requirement, that the 30-day the notice that they have to give us, and you're suggesting also with that item that we reduce the fee from $200 to $100.
That is correct.
All right. How does the board feel about that?
I like the idea.
I do too.
Ann?
I really was torn about this, and part of the reason that I'm torn about it is something that Kirk just mentioned, which I don't recall being in the presentation on the agenda, that this comes out of largely concern for short-term vacation rental customers. I obviously am concerned about them as customers and homeowners in our area. But I have to say that the choice to use your home as a vacation rental is a personal choice and can be suspended with the county at any time. That, according to my reading of the fees and charges right now, is that if you officially suspended.
And we're getting some feedback on your loop. Michelle?
I don't know where the feedback's coming from.
You get that from everybody.
But I do have a comment after she's done.
Okay.
Well, and so you can suspend your use of your home as a vacation rental, and you can therefore change your fee structure with us. If I read this correctly, your fees would go down by $50 a month. Part of my concern also is the history of why we have a $200 fee instead of a $100 fee. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that when the fee was lower, there ended up being a lot of challenging situations with people not paying their bills or wanting us to turn it off and then turn it back on and then turn it off again. And it reminded me of the time years ago when my Dish TV or Charter or whatever could be turned off when I left my home here to go back to Portland. I could call them and ask them to suspend service, and they would do that, and I wouldn't be charged until I came back and called them and asked them to turn it back on again. And I'm afraid if we make that option more attractive by lowering the charge, that we're going to be asking for trouble down the road. So I guess I would suggest to the vacation rental folks that maybe they suspend their use of their home, lower their bill that way, and if they don't plan to use their own home themselves, then their shutoff fee is $200.
I would like to weigh in on this. I would agree with Ann on a number of points. I think that since we're just starting into this economic part of the pandemic, though, that if one of these short-term rentals wanted to shut off, that we not require them to have the 30 days notice over, say, the next 30-day period. That they could call, they could look at their financial, or even over the next 60-day period, they could look at their financial situation and say, look, I've decided to keep it as a short-term rental, but I'm going to shut off the water because I'm not going to use it for I don't know how long. And we wouldn't require them to wait 30 days after they noticed it to do it. We would do it as soon as we could. But to keep that $200 fee in place, one, to prevent some of the things that Ann talked about, but also, as soon as they shut it off, we're going to be down revenue to the tune of $140 per short-term rental. So looking at the revenue side, I don't want to go too far in that direction and then have to pull back from it.
Carolyn or Michelle?
Yes, Cameron.
How many short-term or vacation rentals do we have at this time?
Currently, we have 244 vacation rentals, but my comment that I wanted to make was, remember, some of these two-thirds of the houses here are second homes. They're not, let's get vacation rental out of it. I mean, yeah, they'll get a bigger break, but we have 244 vacation rentals. We have 1,084 residences, and probably half of those are vacation homes. So it's not just turning off their license. Nobody's coming down here. There's a stay-at-home order.
Well, there's quite a few people that are coming down.
I know, they are, but
they're second homes.
Anne, go ahead.
Well, and to your point, Cameron, that's exactly right, and they are entitled and welcome to do that. It's their property. They own it. They can use it whatever way they like. That they are not the tourist industry as much as they are our neighbors that just aren't here all the time.
We have five people in Mistucca Ridge that have moved down here last month and are here until the end of the summer, and they are part-timers. I think we're seeing more of that, and I think we'll continue to see more of that.
Yes.
We have two on our street, too.
John?
I'm good with the reduction from 200 to 100, and I like the idea of moratorium on the CIC charges.
Can we wait to talk about the CIC charges for a minute and get this piece taken care of?
Whatever you want.
How much money are we talking about as far as $100?
$100 is a reduction from $200. So if we were to go in and turn on and turn off somebody's water, at this point we charge them $200. The reduction would be half. $100.
And Carolyn, if you don't mind, I'd like to point out that most of the customers we've suggested this option to don't take us up on it. I would expect the numbers to be very low.
Very low.
Anne, would you hold for a second? Cameron, are you outside? Because I think you may be interfering with Anne's video.
No,
you
I'm in the house.
Okay.
No, I'm in my house.
All right. Anne, go ahead. Let's see if we can get that kickback.
And my other point I'm trying to remember as we're talking. Back to the number of houses that might be affected. I don't think we can make decisions based on guesstimates of how many people might be affected. I think we have to make decisions and propose policies and implement things that are reasonable and rational and in consideration of the budgetary and operational stability of the authority. So I know it's a curiosity how many people might be affected, but I don't think that is a point on which I would personally want to make a decision.
All right, would one of you like to make a motion?
Well, are we going to make two motions, or are we going to talk about the CIC charges and have it in the same motion as suggested?
I think they need to be separate because they're very different issues and different parts of the rate structure.
Well, make them separate.
I'm sorry, Kirk, and then I believe it was Cameron. Kirk?
We have no problem. We'll make those motions separate.
Cameron, you wanted to add?
Yes, I think right now Kurt said there were two individuals that were asking for this. At this time, I think table it and talk about it next month and see if there's a more people inquire about it.
Ann?
I'd be okay with revisiting that next month.
John?
I just assume make a motion now and do it.
You'd like to make a motion? Go ahead.
All right, then I move that until 30 days after the governor declares an end to the emergency, that we reduce the indefinite water sewer lock-off fee from $200 to $100.
Did you want to include the suspension of the 30-day period of advance notice?
Sure, yes, please.
Is there a second on that motion?
I'll second it.
All right. It has been moved and seconded until 30 days after the governor has removed the emergency order regarding COVID-19, that PCJWSA suspend the required 30 days to provide notice for indefinite water sewer lockoffs and reduce the fee from $100 to $200. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Nay.
Nay. And Tom is not on the line with us. So in a tie vote, Michelle, parliamentary procedure?
I'm sorry, I don't know it.
Doesn't pass. If it's a tie, it resolution doesn't pass.
Yeah, as far
as
I
thought.
Yeah.
Okay, the motion does not pass at this point, but because of its importance, I would like it put on back on the agenda for next month. And if we can have, Kirk, if we can monitor data with regards to this.
I'll provide a report on this item and reintroduce it as a separate item. That might make it simpler as well.
All right. Next item under new business is discussing a possible moratorium on the wastewater treatment CIC charges through June 30th, 2020. Kurt, do you want to talk about this a little bit?
Yes. Staff has looked at three different options for reducing the capital improvement charges for the construction of the wastewater treatment plant loan payments that would allow us to reduce this CIC charge for all customers, and it would reduce it. The options that we looked at would be to reduce it and basically suspend any billing of those fees for a period of time, at least through the June 20th or the June 2020 board meeting. We also looked at the cost of reducing that fee by 30%. And also at 15%. Initially, we knew that we had the reserves that we could make a reduction in this area. And the reason we want to make, or we're proposing make a, making a reduction in for the CIC charge is because many of our customers have been impacted by layoffs. Others have been impacted by closures of their businesses. And this is just an area where we have some surplus funding available where we could assist our customers for this immediate short period. This is not something that we would recommend taking place for a long period. Unless we find that at some point we don't need to charge, if during the budget this year we don't need to charge a full the same amount. But at this point we're just talking about lowering this charge for a short period to help people through this transition period.
All right, discussion. Ann, you want to start?
Yeah, I think this is a very, very complicated issue in terms of the budget. And when I read this, and thank you, Kirk, for your additional comments on the agenda and tonight, I just don't feel as though I'm at a point where I can make a decision on this particular issue. I don't feel like I have enough information. I don't feel like I have the comparative ideas that staff laid out. You referred to three options, and I think what we're seeing here is one of those three. But I did make some notes, and pardon me, but because I'm going to just read them to you. And it's about putting a moratorium on the wastewater treatment plant. I have a concern about what's the long-term cost of this idea, and so that would ask for the three options to be presented to us and how they would affect the budget through the end of the year. And another concern along those same lines is, would it require a supplemental budget process to do this? Because my understanding is that if we have to go through the supplemental budget process, that's essentially the same as the original budget process with involving the budget committee and public hearings, and it takes a couple or 3 months to pull that off usually, but not that it couldn't be possibly accelerated. And a third area of concern for me is what this would mean for the overall budget in the long term in terms of our payments for the USDA loan and the obligatory reserve that we have to have on file. Those payments are not going to be forgiven to PCJWSA. And just to elaborate a little bit more, I appreciate and share the concerns for the business and the residential customers, Kirk, that you expressed on the agenda and tonight. But I observe that many of the businesses, and this is not to say that they are not going to be hugely impacted by this, but many of the businesses are actually still functioning at some level. So they're far less likely to seek a water shutoff. And of course, now we're talking about just the CIC, so that comment may not relate as directly. But the businesses will also have access to federal loans for small businesses in particular that are most likely convertible to grants. Out of concern for the residential customers who might be experiencing some really serious financial challenges, I would suggest that we consider a motion more to move a considerable amount of money, and I tossed in my notes a figure of $10,000, from the water operating budget contingency line item to the customer assistance line item for both water and sewer in some kind of balance. I didn't suggest that. So that we're prepared to help customers who really have a financial need. And several years ago, we established a relationship with CARE to address these needs in the community. And while it's never been used, as far as I know, I think it's perfectly positioned to help customers who really do have a need for financial assistance. And I think we could promote this program on our new website, on our monthly billing notices, and through possibly an article in the Pacific City Sun, so we make certain, again, that people realize this is available. And one of the reasons why I've always really appreciated that we have this program available is because it's based on an independent analysis, which removes any possibility of any perceived bias or abuse in decision making, and again, that it helps people who really truly do have the need for financial assistance. So, those are my concerns.
Thank you. Michelle, you want to add to that?
Would you mind?
Why don't I get input from the other board members and then have you do the financial, or do you want to do the financial picture first? Is that what where you're headed?
It is. I think I might alleviate a lot of those questions.
All right.
So PCJWSA decided to do the wastewater treatment plant years and years ago, and we started collecting monies from the customers, all customers, in 2016. And this is this only fund. There is no supplemental budget coming up for any fund at this point. We're financially in a good position. But we're only looking at the 002 fund of the wastewater treatment plant CICs. That fund currently has $1.8 million in it, which this year we will make our first payment of $396,000. We will also put it in a reserve account of $396,000, which is 10 times what they requested. We're putting in the whole 10 years of reserves at once. We are also putting in short-lived asset reserves at $90,000. Once that is done and our fiscal year is over, the wastewater treatment plant fund will have in excess of $1 million still left in it. Once we start paying our payments on a regular basis of $396,000, plus the reserve, short-lived asset reserves, we will go probably 6 years at that rate with no impact whatsoever, none. So the three options that Kirk was talking about, one was a three-month through the end of the fiscal year moratorium on all capital improvement charges, which is $99,000. That's all it entails, $99,000, but it turns off all CIC payments to regular customers, vacation, and all businesses. That's one option. The second option is a reducing the wastewater treatment plant CICs, doing it now instead of waiting for the budget, so it'd be a moratorium in lowering the fees for the next 3 months at a 15% reduction. After at 6 years, we would have to, and I'm not saying wait 6 years, I'm just saying we have at least enough funds for 5 full years at that new rate. The third option is a little more extreme, and it was a 30% reduction, but we could go through 5 years and just be at zero. We'd still have all of our reserves. We'd still, at that point, have put in $450,000 for short-lived assets. So this doesn't affect any operating. I agree with you, Ann. I like the contingency money to care. But this is one fund that we've been collecting on since 2016, and we've made lots of interest on it. We've been very prudent with it, and it's available.
Michelle, I have a couple of questions regarding what you stated. One is that what we're calling the reserve, in other words, the money that is in that fund that is not dedicated to the June 20th payment, that is not dedicated to the short-lived assets and that is not dedicated to the 1 year in reserve, if we called that money our reserve money, that money, I think, could be possibly used for what we were calling the bid alternatives.
No.
That we were not...
It can't be. It cannot. The fees that we are collecting through the agreement we have with USDA was for the revenue bond only. The reserves that you're talking about for the bond alternatives, we still have grant money out there that we're going to use for that.
Correct, but I was thinking about the bid alternatives 2, 3, 4, not the bid alternative with the disk filter that we're using now. So what you're telling me is that the documents were constructed in that this money that we collected could only go toward the revenue bond itself and be used for short-lived assets.
Correct. And I did talk to Rural Development, and they're fine with this.
So my next question has to do with if we were, I have two questions. One question is if we were to go into recession as a result of the pandemic, and if we were to lose half of our short-term rentals and half of our businesses, mm-hmm. the money we collect for the CIC WWTP would be reduced by 30%.
Well, I agree. That's probably could be true, and that's why I liked the first option best of a one-time 3-month moratorium. We don't know if we're going to go into full recession, but
that's true. So I was just wanting to make that point that's another angle that we need to watch. The other point that I wanted to make has to do with a public perception process. If we put the moratorium on the CIC now, but think about putting it back in at the beginning of the new fiscal year, and we're also potentially increasing the budget, then we've given them a break for 3 months, but then we're putting it back on and increasing their bill. And at a total moratorium, I'm not sure how the public is going to handle dropping down and then coming back up. And, you know, we knew this and we knew that, and it's hard to explain. These all come from different funds.
Well, okay. So I've given you the information financially.
Right.
We could do nothing. We could just leave it as is.
Okay. Thank you. That addresses that question. Yes. Kirk and then
question
Ann.
Michelle.
Oh, I'm sorry. Cameron.
Okay, I'll go first. I just wanted to add that if we did do a complete moratorium of this charge, the cost would be $33,000 a month to the fund. If we only reduced it by 30%, it would be $10,000 per month. And if we reduced it by 15%, it would be $5,000 per month. So
per month. Yes.
I'm looking at it.
Annually.
Yeah. So basically, we're talking about reducing our revenues in that area by $33,000 for a full moratorium, $10,000 a month if it's a 30% reduction in this charge, and $5,000 if it's a 15%. So I personally would recommend that we consider doing a 15 or 30% reduction, and we have this surplus revenue, as Michelle pointed out, and I don't think it would have an impact on our eventual repayment of that loan.
Okay, Kirk, I'm going to ask you to hold the opinion until the other two board members have time to speak up, and I think,
okay.
Sean, you had your hand up.
I did. I have some questions and then some comments. First on the question, can you, we're talking about, when you were talking about lowering payments and then raising payments, you're talking about a budget increase for next year? And what is that?
Michelle, I think, could answer that best.
Yeah, thanks. The only increase that we were possibly looking at in the budget that we're working on right now was for the operating user fees of water and sewer in the operating accounts, the 104 and the 105 funds. That's the only location that we were looking at increasing, and that has to do with, I mean, that's a whole budget process of insurance going up 18%, salaries going up, new employees. So, and we're looking at 3%, and we're talking about $1.94. That's just on basic.
Okay, well, yeah, no, I get it. So let me tell you my comments that, and I don't want to, I guess I am going to sound like a broken record, but we're not anywhere close to seeing the impact of what's happening right now. Everybody is laid off. Businesses are going to start shutting down quite crazy. Everybody is doing what they can to beg, borrow, cheat, steal, reduce their prices. They're doing everything that they can to survive. And I think that we have an obligation to try to help people as much as we can. This is going to be a huge economic hit. It's going to be a hit to business. It's going to be a hit to people's salaries. It's going to be a hit to government revenues. Everybody has to reestablish. We're looking at a world now. So I think we have an obligation, especially given that we have a surplus in this account. I think we have an obligation to try to help our customers out. So I like the idea of a moratorium, complete moratorium through June 30th. I think that's going to send a great message to our customers that, hey, we understand what's going on. We want to work with you as much as possible because this is a whole new norm.
Thank you. Cameron?
Well, Michelle answered my question as far as the money part of per month. I think this impact, it's not going to be a two-weeker, it's not going to be a month, it's going to be deep. And I agree, I just don't want to hurt where, yes, we do need to do something for our customers, because this is a community. I'd like to see the moratorium, yes. 15%, yes. But I don't want to cut our throats.
Let me weigh in if I can personally. Or Sean, do you want to continue?
Yeah, sorry. I had one more question. The surplus, essentially, or the reserve, or whatever you want to call it, that we have, is that because we started collecting fees and it took longer than expected for us to start the wastewater treatment plant upgrade?
That's correct.
So in my mind, what that says is we were collecting money really before we needed to. We didn't know that at the time.
No.
But in hindsight, that's just the way it worked out. And so it's really not our money, it's our customer.
That's correct.
And I think this is a great gesture as a way of giving that money back to them.
Okay, I'd like to weigh in. I after understanding that none of the CIC WWTP can be used for anything other than revenue payments, at this point I could support a 30% reduction for 3 months, looking at maintaining that reduction long term or even going to a higher level based on models that we would develop over the next month or two, looking at our long-term future and making sure that we had enough in our reserves to take us I don't know, 3 years or 4 years or 5 years and still make that payment without having to increase or change anything if we had a loss, not a loss in customers, but a change in customers. Because if our half of our short-term rentals flip over and don't become short-term rentals anymore, we have lost part of that revenue stream to, in the long term, keep our, to collect money. And I would hate at any point in the next 3 to 5 years to have to increase the amount we collect from people in order to make our bond debt payment.
So you think that in 5 years that we're stable?
I don't know that anybody has any idea where the economy is going to go. But I think that if we were to do a 30% reduction right now for 3 months, that as we move through the budget process, we could look at modeling for 3 to 5 years out on this, assuming a certain loss in revenue, and decide to drop it entirely or extend it in a way and yet guarantee that the revenue payments would be able to be made, the revenue bond payments would be able to be made over the long haul without increasing the customer base that remains, and putting that burden on them. Because we do have a 78% or so of our customers are residential customers. And if we had to transfer the burden of collecting this money, more of the burden to them, that is going to be a good part of that group is going to be very hard hit. And I am very concerned about the commercial properties and the short-term rentals right now. But at the same time, our fiduciary responsibility and being able to pay these, the bond payments and the revenue bond payments are critical that we as a board look at that in the long term and make sure we can handle it.
And
Don?
I think people are hurting now. I mean, well, if everything that I've seen says that, you know, with this whole flattening the curve thing, I mean, people are getting hit hard now. I think if we give them the complete moratorium for 3 months, 3 months from now, people might be getting back to work. People might be having income coming back in. And so they might be in a better position to pay, as you know. So I think hitting a $90,000 a month now for a couple of is going to help people a lot more than 30% per month over a longer term. People need help now.
Cameron, would you weigh in, and then let's go to Michelle.
Maybe I would probably bump mine up to 15% to a 20%. I think we're going to have to revisit this in by June. I'm sure of it. I'd like to, because this is going to be a long haul.
So I'm sorry if I understand you correctly, Cameron. You're recommending a 15 or 20% decrease at this point in time for 3 months?
Yes, and revisit it in 3 months.
Michelle, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I do. Just so you realize, if we take 30%, the high-end, high commercial user right now is paying $145. If I take 30% of that off, they're still going to be paying $100. So that's a $45 savings for a longer term instead of $145. If we did a moratorium for 3 months completely and then went down to the 15% for the budget for next year and 4 years after that, we're doing two things. We're doing it twice. We're reducing the fees permanently for 4 or 5 years, and we're giving a 90-day moratorium. And Sean, just to let you know, it's $33,000 a month. It's a total of $99,000 for the 3 months.
Right.
Okay.
Ann?
So, Sean, I'm trying to think along your lines, and and where I kind of get stuck, and I come back to the 30% reduction, knowing, as Cameron just said, that we're going to revisit this in the budget for 2021. We're going to be factoring this thinking into our budget discussions for sure. We're not making that next year's budget decision. We're just making the next 3 months. But picture yourself and help me think this through. If you're a customer that all of a sudden doesn't have to pay this CIC charge at all, which you're going to think, great. And then on July 1st, that charge goes back up to 30% of its current level. And again, we can't predict what's going to happen with the economy. We can't predict what's going to happen locally or in the state or in the nation. So to me, the 30% seems like a step in the right direction, which will also give us time to think through what we want to do on a more long-term basis for next year's fiscal year. So,
let me give you a sense of what's happening with businesses right now and what I have heard is happening with some residents. What businesses, myself included, are doing is trying to get their leases restructured so that they're not paying anything now, and they'll back end it so that your lease payments now drop and you make up for it on the back end of your lease agreement. And the reason that that is happening all across the country is because people are in deep shit now. And so I think the idea, giving our customers a break now with a complete moratorium over the course of 3 months, even if it means rising again in 3 months from now, is going to help our customers a lot right now, because what's key, the next 3 months. If this thing can't be figured out in 3 months, you're going to see half of businesses across America shut down. There is no business in America, except for the big ones on Wall Street, that have a 3 month supply of reserve. There's just not. I think the more money that we can get people now makes a bigger difference, even if it means that they've got to pay again 3 months from
now. Don, would it work if we could find a compromise in the middle and cut the rate by 30% for 3 months, but suspend payment for the commercial businesses for 3 months on the CIC? It might be a financial paperwork nightmare, but could we suspend the remainder of the commercial accounts for 3 months in order to help their short-term cash flow?
Well, two comments. One, you know, thank you for thinking of me, but this doesn't just affect businesses. I mean, the people that are at home that don't have jobs, that aren't getting any money, they're going to appreciate the break as much as businesses do. Yeah, businesses pay more in the CIC charge, but, you know, as a percentage of your operating costs, whether you're a family or a business, I mean, it all is going to help. Secondly, anything that we can do is going to help, right? A 10% discount is going to help. A 30% discount is going to help. I think a moratorium for 3 months, because the next 3 months are so critical to everybody's survival. I think having more money go to people's pocket now is more important than less money going in over the long. That's my opinion.
On theory, I agree with you. In number crunching, it's hard to look at, because two-thirds of the amount that we collect is within our short-term rentals and our business accounts. And so a change to a residential account over 3 months, I don't know if it's going to be a determining factor. And those particular folks that Ann was speaking to with regards to the CARE program, I think they've got support there, and that support can be immediate because that money is there in our budget. but I could be wrong. It could be a paperwork headache that people just don't have time or energy to deal with.
I think, well, let me tell you what I'm doing. I have spent basically 10 hours a day applying for every possible thing that I can apply for. We're talking small business administration loans, direct loans, personal loans. I mean, and you know, Ann, you mentioned earlier that there's help coming from the SBA. I got news for you. That help is not coming. Those banks are sitting on that money, and they do not want to give it out. They want to earn their 5% on that money. They do not want to give it to them. Trust me. I've been fighting this battle for the last 10 days. So, you know, I really, this is just how I feel. I feel that the more help we can give people in the next 90 days, the better everyone is going to be.
Ann?
So, Sean, I totally get what you just said about the banks. And not to, I think there's a lot of focus on the news right now that the problem is with the paperwork and the phone trees not getting answered and that sort of thing. I think that's a smokescreen, and I think the real reason is what you just said. The banks don't want to let go of that money, and every day they hold on to it, they make money on it, even though they don't make very much anymore. But anyway, that is a side, and that's personal remarks and really doesn't have any place here. But I am still struggling with the concept of no charge. I'm struggling less with this based on the funds are there. We have the funds in the bank. We could make that work. I'm starting to get convinced of the importance of the 3-month period. I just hope that if that's what we do, I hope and pray every single one of us involved in this conversation will be the first ones to say to the community on July 1st when those charges go back into order on some level, because they are going to have to. We can't suspend that for indefinitely. That we made this decision based on the critical 3-month period, and that the fees will go back to some level with the next budget year. I don't want to put us in a position where we can't change that.
Don?
I agree with that completely, and I think it's really important that we be very direct with our customers, whether it's a statement in their billing, we put it on the website, we say everything, and I think we have to look at it from the PR angle too, and we say, hey, look, we recognize this is unprecedented. I mean, nothing like this has ever happened before. I think it's great that we send a letter out, put it on our website, and say, hey, look, this is what we have decided we think we can do to help out with everybody struggling through this crisis. We are suspending these CIC payments for 90 days, whatever the time frame is, until June 30th. To try to help people get through this crisis, and we have an end date on it, and we re-examine it if we need to. But I think that message that we send to people is huge.
I agree.
I like part of what you're saying, but when you added that if we have to, we put it back in, I don't want to hear those words out there in the public at all. I want it assumed that it's going back in until we sit down and make a decision it's not. Otherwise, we're going to have the public on our case to try to keep it off. And that's a concern. I don't think it's hard to present. It's hard to put fees back in once you've let them go, whether it's a moratorium or not. And I have a real concern about that. Ann and then Sean.
I agree with that, and that is my biggest concern is for all the good we will gain, and I think we will immediately on the public relations side of it, Sean, that public relations good can disappear in a heartbeat when that fee goes back on at any level. So I think it's a risk. Quite frankly, I'm coming to the point where I'm feeling more like taking that risk, but I think the language has got to be clear that this is not permanent, that this is very temporary through the end of the year, and decisions affecting this going forward will be made through the budgeting process with the long-term financial health of the authority primary in our minds.
I want to make a clarification. I wasn't saying that if these fees would go back into place. I was saying that we might re-examine this moratorium on June 30th, and we may decide it needs to go longer than that. I'm not saying that these fees aren't going to go back in place. They absolutely are. But, you know, even if the public hates us 3 months from now, this is the right thing to do.
Well, we're in a position that we can do it, but to understand that we are going to have to cover it. We did collect the money in 2016 as a start, correct? So if we can do something now, yes. But be known that we are going to have to reinstate those fees.
And right. We don't know when, and we don't know how much, but that will come back.
If somebody's got a crystal ball, bring it on, baby. So let's do something now.
Okay, it sounds like discussion is coming to a close. Do I hear a motion?
Kirk had his hand up.
I'm sorry, okay. Kirk, go ahead.
I just wanted to reassure the board, it's pretty clear that you all are aware that we can't afford to choose any of these options. And I have to say, I previously mentioned I favored a lower percentage. This discussion has me swaying back up, and I'd be comfortable supporting any of these options. And also, I want to reassure the board that we could work diligently on this message and make sure that customers know that this is a temporary change.
Michelle, did you have anything to add?
No, it's your decision. I've given you everything I got.
Okay. Cameron and then Sean?
At one point in time, we will be asking the community for a bond for something. So hopefully this will be in our favor. We needed community involvement and support, and I think now this is the time to show them that we are supporting our community.
Thank you. Sean?
I'm all good. I've said what I wanted to say, and happy to make a motion if we're at that point.
I think we are.
All right, well, I would like to make a motion that we put in place a moratorium on wastewater treatment plant CIC charges through June 30th, 2020.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Any discussion? Yes, Ann?
Discussion. I want to go back to a question that I asked when we very first started talking about this. Does this require a supplemental budget process?
It does not.
Thank you.
My question, does this require a resolution because it has to do with rates?
Yes, it does.
Can it go into effect before the resolution is signed and voted on by the board?
You're making a motion to write the resolution.
We're making a motion to do something, but if we don't have a resolution in front of us, therefore we can't.
I understand that.
But resolution.
You're making a motion to have a resolution issued.
Correct.
Okay. So once the resolution is signed, I can't answer that. I have to go read. Usually we have the resolutions in place because we know that they're going to pass. And these are difficult times, and I can't have a... There's no way I could have done this. So I will look it up, but make, for now, a motion to have a resolution issued. And then I'll...
Okay, so if we make a motion to have a resolution issue, and the motion includes what we want the resolution to be, if the resolution needs to be passed prior to enactment of what's in the resolution, then we will have to call a special meeting in order to pass that resolution so that we can act on it sooner.
Correct.
I've always been comfortable, of course, laws are different in Colorado, but if the motion describes the resolution and the resolution it follows that motion, then that motion is, we're authorized to sign it.
Hang on, Michelle.
I'm sorry. On June 7th in 2016, Chair McVicker and Mr. Owen explained a proposal to adopt lower waste and water and sewer CICs by $250 a month per month to partially offset the $10 per month increase to wastewater treatment plant CIC. This was in a business meeting minutes. The motion was done. And there was no resolution.
Would you say what we did at that point again?
Yes. CIC.
Pull it up. I think I can read it. So you're left a little. Oops, lost it. Can't read it. Sorry. Go ahead and read it, please.
Okay. It was CIC schedule. Chair McVicker and Mr. Owen explained a proposal to adopt lower water and sewer CICs by $2.50 each per month to partially offset the $10 per month increase of the wastewater treatment plant CIC. Discussion followed. Motion. Director Price moved to accept the authority manager's recommendation regarding CIC rates for water and sewer for budget year 16-17. Sewer CIC rate would be $5 and water CIC rate would be $3 for all accounts for the 004 and 005 funds. Director Long seconded and the motion carried.
Right, but that was the $10 had already been set by resolution in the budget process. And we pulled that back. So what you're saying is because the current wastewater treatment CIC is set at this level, we could also pull it back by motion and not necessarily resolution.
Correct.
Ann?
I don't know that I'm comfortable with that, and here's why. Because my recollection is that the budget committee and then the board had approved CICs for water and sewer operating at $10, and the choice was
to reduce
implementation. We could have charged the full 10, but we could charge anything up to that to be reflected in a sound budget.
Correct.
So we weren't changing the budgetary process at that point.
No,
we were just adjusting within our right.
You're correct. I remember it that way, too. I just...
No, I didn't need a resolution.
I had to put that in my file. I'll get a resolution.
Yes, I think if we can act on the motion that's on the table with a second, then we can prepare a resolution and have a special meeting of this same sort where we can all vote yes on it. I'm assuming we will. I don't know. Then we could have the resolution done, and we might even be able to do that this week.
Okay.
Any other discussion on the motion that's on the table? John, do you want a motion? Yes, I was going to say, do you want to modify your motion to include that we need to make the resolution and repeat it, and we'll move forward?
Michelle, when do the next bills go out?
They go out on the 27th. So we have, today's the 7th, we have 20 days.
Okay. All right, so let me redo my motion. I move that we create a resolution to put in place a moratorium on the wastewater treatment plant CIC charges through June 30th, 2020. Wondering if that should be July 30th, 2020, given that we're going to take a month to put it into place.
Well, our new budget is going to be in place as of July 1st, and in the next 2 or 3 months, we're going to be going through the budget process.
Yes.
So we're going to be making that decision in the next 2 or 3 months that would start on July 1st.
Next
All right, let me say that again. So I make a motion that we create a resolution that we put a moratorium on the wastewater treatment plant CIC charges through June 30th, 2020.
Second. Oh, I guess it already has been seconded.
Not the new one. It has been moved and seconded that this board create a resolution putting a moratorium on wastewater treatment CIC charges through June 30th, 2020. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. We'll have the resolution. If we find that we have to, if we discover that we have to have the resolution in place before we can actually implement it at the end of this month, we will call a special meeting for the purpose of approving the resolution.
Can we do that by a phone vote?
Cameron, this board will not meet in person until the physical distancing order has been withdrawn by the governor. So, yes, it will be through this process.
I've got a question.
Okay, we are now... Hang on just a second.
That's good. Oh, go ahead.
Is your question relating to this item on the agenda?
No.
Okay, could you hold it until director comments?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Do we still have, we have a guest on the line? This is our time for guest questions and comments.
And we need to unmute any guests at this, I guess.
Yes, then. From our end, it's done. Is Tony still there?
It shows there, but I don't hear a voice, and it shows that Tim is there, but I don't hear, he's not unmuting his things, his devices, so we will move forward. Item 9, director comments. Cameron, you can go first.
Yes, is there any way now that we've had this emergency of the covert that we can make decisions of any type of sort that we don't have, I mean, to do a resolution, a temporary, a stay, or any type? Is there any possibility that we can get something that in our or somewhere?
Cameron, we have an emergency process and procedures, and if needed, we'll follow those. Other director comments? John?
I would just like to say and express my thanks to the PCJWSA staff for everything that they're doing during this crazy time, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ann?
Well, and I had said something to that effect earlier, and I agree with you completely. And I also want to thank Michelle and Kirk for their work on making this meeting happen this way. It has its little ups and downs, and but I think we'll get used to it like everybody else in the world has, and we'll get Tom into the loop and with his equipment, whatever system he has, and we'll move forward.
All right. I have a couple of items to add. I just wanted to let the board know that in order to, this is in regards to check signing, in order to keep me out of the office and keep operations moving forward, I've purchased a signature stamp for check signing. Michelle and Kirk have verified with our auditors that as long as we have a procedure in place and a paper trail, that is okay, that the signing of a check with a stamp is acceptable. And we've set up a process at this point where staff will email me the PDF list of the payables with the amounts, who's written the check, and the check number on it. I'll review that list, call if I have a question, and then authorize the signature stamp by returning the list of payables with a certified electronic dated and time-stamped signature that will lock that document from any further changes, and that will be part of the record that shows the approval for signature, and then staff will stamp sign the checks. Just to let the board know that we are working on keeping everyone out of that office as much as possible. Any questions?
And also on that, yes.
Go ahead, Cameron, you have a question?
It should be two different people, one that does the stamp and one that does the verifying of that. It should not be one person. It should be two.
That is correct. That is correct. I do the verifying and return the paperwork, and the other person does the stamp. Good point.
Chairman Vickers?
Yes.
Hello?
Tony?
Yes. Sorry, I didn't get in. During questions and comments, I think that the way that you guys have been discussing this and handling this is very appropriate, and you're to be commended for your discussions regarding this matter. And moving forward, let's hope it gets better.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, everybody, for your time and patience.
I have one other item on the agenda that we need to be thinking, items on director comments that we need to be thinking about. I want to remind everybody, as we all know, that our meetings are public meetings and that we have chosen to include guest questions and comments on our agenda. With the video teleconferencing, this may or may not pose an issue for us. I would ask for the public's patience as we work through the software challenges, and I would suggest at this time that we encourage the public to submit their questions via email to Kirk, either before the meeting or during the meeting if they're listening, so that we can address them during the meeting. The public can call in, get the phone number to sign in and listen to our meeting, but at this point, to have more than just the board and the staff on video, if I had to look at 30 people or 30 little boxes on the screen that popped up in their own order without any organization and trying to figure out if the board wanted to talk or not, I think I might go nuts. So if we can encourage the public to come to our meetings and listen and to submit their questions in writing, I think that would be helpful, at least for the next several months as we ramp up on this software.
Carolyn?
Yes.
I have a comment. When you do our meetings, if we're going to go ahead and do this, I would like to know who is all on as far as work, the employees, Kurt, Michelle, whoever, and if there are other guests. I would like to know that prior.
That would be nice. We need, first of all, I think, Cameron, we need to get you video on so that you can see you can see who's on the call, at least with the information that people input. If someone's calling in on a landline, we only see their landline number, we don't see a name. If they're calling in on a device such as a iPad or a cell phone or a computer, and they sign in, then you can see their name right there. So we'll need to do some work with you in the next month so that you have a better participation framework, because at this point I don't think you've got it all in front of you.
All right, thank you. Thanks everybody for your time.
Anything else?
Hold on.
Yes. Sean.
So just a couple of things on that. One, Cameron, if you can find a way to do this app, this BlueJeans thing, you can see everybody that's on the call. So you can go up to the people and you can see everybody that's on there. Second comment is, we have to input our name when we join. So the only reason that my name is on there is because I input. So that might be something to think about in terms of yes being on there. And then the final thing I would just like to say is that there is a chat feature. So if guests are watching this and they want to ask a question, they could go to the chat and they could ask their question. And then when it comes time for guest questions at the end, we could go up and look at that chat and see if any of our guests have asked any questions, and we could address them that way.
That, I think, is going to be an option. I know that some of those options, such as the whiteboard setting and so forth, require us to buy a higher-level version of the software, and we aren't quite there yet.
Chat is working.
Ann? Chat is working?
I am curious, and not that we'll take the time to do it right now, but I am curious exactly how the chat thing works. If you had, as Sean's suggesting, numerous people that wanted to chat and they put stuff in there, will it accumulate those and then we can go to it at the end of the meeting? That's something I think we can test out amongst us. But the other thing I wanted to ask, and when we had the conversation about checks, I was reminded that I wondered the other day if this was a good opportunity to move our payroll process to paperless payroll, and I didn't know if Kirk had any ideas, or Michelle and Kirk had discussed that at any point since he's been here.
Thank you for bringing that up. That's something that we've talked about and we're hoping to implement. So the board has no objection. We want to auto-deposit our payrolls as soon as possible.
Michelle, did you have a comment here?
No, I was just, yay, thank you, in agreement.
Would that take a motion from us, or is that a personnel matter we would not need to weigh in on, right?
No, it's just a...
Yeah, that's procedural personnel issue, so I think you could go ahead.
I'm glad you brought it up. With everything else going on, it just crossed my mind to even talk about it.
Hey, Sean, I sent you a chat. Right. Can you see it?
I see two chats.
You do? Okay.
Michelle, hi all.
Okay.
So.
Oh yeah, I see that. Yeah, I do. Yep.
Let's do another. We need to work with Tom and Cameron, and then we're going to need to do some tests this month. And if you'll let us know if you need us participating in those tests to make them work, send us an email, and those of us that can will join in.
Anne is at my beck and call.
Yes, I am.
I'd like to have it on my laptop.
We could do that.
I am your guinea pig.
Thank you.
So, Cameron, you can go to the website and download BlueJeans app to your laptop.
Okay, hope this time that when I hit the tap to load, it'll load. Is it a launch file?
Well, I didn't download an app. All I did was click on the link. I didn't have to put an app on my computer.
Yeah, we've noticed that some you do, some you don't.
Okay. We're going to take the rest of this how to use BlueJeans discussion out of the board meeting and do it at a different time, and it is 7:11, and I'm going to adjourn this meeting so we can all go have dinner. Thank you all.
Good night.
and good night.
Good night.
Good night.